why was this series done this way? There are a great many people who have a vested interest in locking history in place as it was in the late 60s and early 1970s. The people who are really suffering from the Vietnam War, ironically, are the people who didn't serve. They're the ones who are now ridden with guilt. They're the ones that are now trying to explain to their children and their grandchildren why they ran away or why they avoided service. Read Myra McPherson's new book, Long Time Passing, about the agonies that the anti-war people are going through and the agonies the protesters are going through. I must say my own impression is it couldn't happen to nicer people. But but we need to understand that the Vietnam veterans, by and large, have came back and got on with their lives and are doing quite well, thank you. But the people who are still trying to justify what they did are the people who protested the war. And if you look at that documentary in that light, as an attempt to freeze history, if you will, and to justify why they were morally right and what they did, then you have some of an explanation of why this series went the way it did. But my point is that won't wash. History is not on their side. The truth will out. And the attempt that's being made here today is just another step in that process. Thank you very much.
Your next speaker will be Mr. Moorhead.
I've had the unfortunate experience recently of being on the same platform with Colonel Summers, and I told myself after the last time that under no circumstances would I ever have to follow him. Unfortunately, not only do I have to follow him today, but I see that Harry has already very eloquently stated a perception that I've had as the national director of a program called the Vietnam Veterans Leadership Program for the last couple years. But there are a few aspects of that that I would like to go into in a little greater depth, and also to relate it to the WGBH series, which I believe is the subject of this meeting. I have a few perceptions about the documentary that I'd like to expand upon, and also to identify what I think are a few very regretful omissions in their treatment of several subjects. Firstly, the American soldier and his role in Vietnam, and what he, as a Vietnam veteran, has experienced in our society today. I have an impressionistic sense that, and there are numerous instances in the documentary that I could refer to, but I think an overall sensation that the American soldier in Vietnam did not know why he was there and did not have a great sense of pride in his service, in what he was accomplishing. I think as a former soldier that I would definitely disagree with that perception, and I have found in the experience of working with Vietnam veterans all across the United States over the last 2 years, and our program has set up chapters in almost every state, that far and away most Vietnam veterans take tremendous pride in what they accomplish in Vietnam. And I think Dan Craig has gone to this in much greater depth, have a tremendous sense of willingness to serve again, that they would return to a similar engagement. And they feel that as a result of that service, they did not only what they should have for their country, but they did something that is consistent with the finest American values and traditions. The Vietnam veteran, unfortunately, came back from Vietnam, did not have the kind of reception that he needed. He was confused. It took him a long time to get his legs underneath him. Our program that this administration started, and we're very grateful for that, took 10 years in coming, one decade after the conclusion of the Vietnam War in 1975, virtually, before we were able to put together a coherent effort to assist the Vietnam veteran in his reintegration into the American society. And when this program was started, it was a dream, a concept, a suspicion that a few Vietnam veterans had that the negative stereotype that of Vietnam veterans, this idea of a drug-crazed dropout, had done serious injury to the Vietnam veteran individually and was doing a tremendous disservice to the society as a whole. There was no unanimity, I think, even within the administration initially, that we would find veterans out there willing to serve their country once again in this sort of calling. And what we discovered is that there were tens of thousands, excuse me, that were willing to step forward, that were willing to help their fellow Vietnam veterans, and this has fundamentally been a self-help effort, to achieve their rightful place in society. We discovered that, unlike what one might have perceived based on what was coming out of Hollywood and what was being shown on television, what we often found in the print media, the average Vietnam veteran had come back from the war, taken his field jacket off, resumed his life, no ticker tape parade. He'd done it on his own, by and large. He came back individually, didn't come back with his unit, had started his family, was making his way in society quite successfully, was well established and well regarded in his community. And we have literally, as I said, tens of thousands of Vietnam veterans who have been willing to step forward and help a few. And I can't put an exact figure on that, but I would say perhaps no more than 5% of the Vietnam veterans who have still been struggling. And since I think we'll all recall there was a rather severe recession right after the war, in large measure that may very well be related to economic disturbances in the country. So I think it's a remarkable story. It's remarkable that they were able to come back, that they were able to accomplish what they've accomplished on their own, and today we're still trying to extend a helping hand to a few of those who still need assistance. One of the things that our program has dedicated itself to is to help not only the Vietnam veterans, but other veterans, and also anyone else in the community that needs assistance. And the program, after 3 years of support from the federal government, is now moving into the private sector and fully intends over the next 5 years, according to their own agreed-upon game plan, to continue to serve the country. Colonel Summers related to his perception that Vietnam veterans have a role to play in the future of the United States. And I believe that's true. I believe that those who stood the test of Vietnam, and I'll try and say this without being too self-serving, but I think that those who were willing at a very young age and given the opposition increasingly that existed in the United States were willing to serve in Vietnam and play their role on behalf of the country, have experienced something, totally aside from the value of having seen the face of a battle, have experienced something that really presents an opportunity, a leadership resource for our society that must be utilized. And to me, I think one of the most disturbing aspects of the lack of receptivity to Vietnam veterans upon their return to the country was that not only would they themselves have greater difficulty in finding dignity and pride in their service on behalf of the country, but that the country itself would be denied the opportunity to fully use this leadership resource. And I think that given what we perceive as the new mood in the country, a new supportiveness, a new understanding of the reality of what the Vietnam veteran did in combat and what he is today in the society, I believe that this problem will be overcome. And I think increasingly, as we have seen throughout our own country's history, the Vietnam veteran will be achieving positions of leadership and continuing to serve the society. I, if I may switch subjects slightly, did provide an interview to WGBH for their chapter on, I think it was called The End of the Tunnel, Light at the End of the Tunnel, 1973-1975. And when I gave that interview, I had great hopes that WGBH would accomplish something that had not been accomplished theretofore in my experience, and that was to give an accurate accounting of the final days of South Vietnam. I think they have, throughout the series, presented some points that were presented well and deserve to be presented. And in general and on balance, I think the segment from 1973 to 75 is a reasonably decent job. However, there was to me, a searing and deeply regretful omission, which I can't say they did out of ignorance, because I specifically provide them extensive background as to what we actually had to do in order to organize the evacuation of not only ourselves and our dependents, of which there were 10,000 in the country, as I recall, before the evacuation commenced, but also the 147,000 Vietnamese civilians that we were able to bring with us. And I was very disappointed about that, because I think that they missed a grand opportunity to explain that despite the ignominy of our withdrawal from Vietnam, and I do believe it was ignominious, despite our betrayal, and I think it was a betrayal, that there were those, and I mean many, who served in the embassy during those final days of South Vietnam, who performed many acts that I think were of extraordinary heroism. I don't think that in my experience in Vietnam, and I had the opportunity to spend several years in combat, I don't think that I personally witnessed more heroism than I did in the final 2 weeks before the country fell. And these acts were performed by Foreign Service officers, by military officers, by even civilians, for that matter, Americans who had come back to Vietnam to assist families, who stepped forward and under tremendous pressure, under great adversity, and at personal risk to themselves, helped many, many Vietnamese that otherwise would not have had a helping hand. Some of the people that were there during those final days are here in the room today, and I would like to just point out a few of them, because there's some excellent case examples with us at this very moment. Moncrief Spear was the consul general in Nha Trang, and I had the opportunity to serve under him at one time. Monty, you want to raise your hand back there just so I can put a face on his name? Yeah, thank you. Yeah, stand up, Monty, please. I wish you'd do that. Well, I wasn't personally in the Trang at the moment of the fall. I had served up there just prior to the attack on Banh Mi Thuot in the Central Highlands, but I received intimate accounts of what took place there. And to me, I think it's really a story within a story, how he and the men on his staff under his leadership were able to escape, and I can't use any other word, from Nha Trang on a moment's notice without any injury to themselves, and fully assisting as many of their people as they could. Robert Mueller, I think, is also here, at least he was a few minutes ago, was the ambassador's press attaché. Where are you, Bob? There he is. I think anyone that was capable of coping with the concerted initiatives of the press corps that had descended on South Vietnam to witness its final moments deserves a word of commendation. I have a remarkable effort by any standard. Colonel Summers has, it looks like, left the room, and I think you all know of Colonel Summers' public reputation. He is a remarkable strategist and military historian, but I definitely recall several hours before the North Vietnamese tanks arrived, sitting up on the roof of the embassy and watching Colonel Summers down in the courtyard as he frantically tried to get a few more airlifts for the several hundred people that we still had responsibility for in the embassy at that time. And these stories and many, many others were not accounted for in the media after the country fell. And regretfully, again, were not accounted for by WGBH. I have not had a conversation with them, and I'm not sure that I fully understand why they would not see something so clearly, that there was dignity and honor there, that even though we were forced to withdraw politically, that every single American there, to the best of my knowledge, was doing everything he possibly could to help as many people as possible. As I said, we pulled out 147,000. It was virtually a mini Berlin airlift. And even though it happened at a very sad time, and I think every single one of us left feeling that we hadn't even begun to do what we were ultimately responsible for, but every effort was made by everyone there, and I think that it was as commendable an experience as I've ever witnessed, and a story that needs to be understood much, much better. The last thing I want to comment on is a movie that I had the opportunity to participate in the making of recently called In Search of Home. As I said, until recently I was the national director of the Vietnam Veterans Leadership Program, and I was asked by the director of the agency, Tom Paukin, who himself is a Vietnam veteran, I might add, to take a team back to Indochina, Southeast Asia, to try and do an update on what is happening to refugees today. The Action Agency is a national volunteer agency and has programs all around the United States that help with the resettlement of refugees, not just from Southeast Asia, but from other parts of the world. But particularly, we've been involved in assisting the resettlement, the reintegration into American society of people from Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam. And we discovered that there was no single documentary treatment of the experience that these refugees had undergone before arriving on our shores. In order to be able to deal with them effectively and to assist them, you have to understand the experience that they've gone through. So I did take this team back with some trepidation last September. I wasn't sure what I would find. I had not been working, my responsibilities had not been devoted to what was happening on a moment-by-moment basis in that part of the world. And it was a coming home for me, too, in a sense, after having left in 1975. I wasn't sure exactly what I would discover. We conducted dozens and dozens of interviews during the 1 month that we were in Thailand, along the Laotian border, just inside Cambodia in several refugee camps that are situated there. I think what I realized as much as anything is that, in one sense, the war is not over. We withdrew our army, our presence, in 1975. But for the people of Southeast Asia, the war continues. They're on a continuum of struggle to establish their rights and their dignity. And perhaps because of our own Vietnam syndrome in this country, we're not able to see it so clearly. It's not well written about. I'm not sure it's well understood that even though the doors have slammed shut on them in a certain sense, that they continue to attempt to maintain their cultures. We talked to people that had just escaped across the Mekong River from Laos. And I understand that there's a spate of them now as the Vietnamese and Pathet Lao control over Laos is solidifying. And they didn't leave because they wanted to leave. In fact, one of the biggest problems they're having in the refugee camps along the Laotian border now, in Thailand, is that the Highland Lao and the Lowland Lao do not want to come to the United States. They think that we are a beacon of hope for them if there's no alternative, but they want to return to their own mountains, to their own rice paddies, to their own country. And they still hope, beyond hope, that someday that will be possible. We talked to the boat people that had just escaped across the South China Sea after some of the most harrowing experiences that I've ever encountered. Savagery barely begins to describe what they've experienced. They left their country because they ultimately discovered that there was no place for them. And only then did they leave. In Cambodia, there are 250,000 Cambodians jammed along the Thai border right now. They have no place to go. They can't go back into the inner part of their country. That's impossible politically in terms of their personal security. And they're still there, as they have been for several years now, in a virtual no man's land along the Thai border. What they told us is that they don't want to be a refugee either. These camps have been repeatedly attacked, and Al Santoli will go into this in much greater depth and detail this afternoon. But the thing that impressed me the most is that they hope to preserve what is left of their culture. They're willing to fight for it, and they are fighting successfully to not only defend themselves, but retake their country. Now, I'm not a foreign policy maker, and I'm not even in a position to advise as to what we ought to do as a country, other than to understand what is taking place there. I think that we need to get beyond 1975 in our own thinking and into the realities of today. The Vietnam veteran individually has had to do that and has made the adjustment, and I think we need to make that adjustment ourselves as a society and as a country. Seeing the hundreds of thousands of refugees that are in this country and still fleeing from the countries of Southeast Asia, finally, made me become, I think, most fully aware of perhaps the true cost of the failure to fulfill our responsibilities in Indochina. And I personally hope that I never have to experience that again in my lifetime or in any of my children's lifetime. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Moorfield. I'm afraid we've already run over our time a little bit, so there's no time for questions. The lunch will be at the same room where we had lunch yesterday, upstairs, and I'll see you up there. Thank you.